everyone, it's Chloe, and I'm so excited to share something fabulous with you, Vogue's first ever global fashion community, Vogue Club. Our members get to mingle with Vogue editors, yes, including me, and fellow fashion enthusiasts at exclusive events around the world. And that's just the start. Membership opens doors to the fashion industry, bringing you expert career advice and insider style and beauty tips. What are you waiting for? Head over to Vogue.com/membership to join, and here's a little treat. Use code TRT20 and snag 20% off your membership. That's TRT20 for 20% off your ticket to Vogue Club. Are you in?
This is the Run Through with Vogue. I'm Chloe Mel.
And I'm Cho Minardi. And we are here in the Vogue offices in front of a live studio audience. And this is the first time we're doing that. I would love to hear from the audience. Are you excited to be here?
It's like SNL. It's live from New York. It's the Run Through. We are hosting an event at Vogue called Forces of Fashion. It's basically a masterclass on all things Vogue.
And we have the most exciting guest here with us. She's a writer. Her best-selling book is called My Body. She's an actress and an activist and, of course, a model.
Emily Radikowski, welcome to the Run Through.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Emily might not remember, but maybe the last time we spent time together was when we were at a super spreader baby COVID party.
Oh yeah,
party.
The super spread, the Omicron baby spreader party.
So all the moms and their kids got COVID together, mm-hmm. but since then we've bounced back and I'm so much happier to see you here today, hopefully testing negative.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know anymore. Like, do the tests even work anymore?
Well, I feel like we should do a Vogue.com post on, like, the etiquette of testing these mm-hmm. days, because I keep getting announcements from my preschool of, like, someone else tested positive. I'm like, stop testing. Yes. I don't want to know. But
controversial,
anyway.
But I feel the same way.
Yeah.
Well, you must be one of the most photographed women in the world. And I'm wondering, like, you know, are you stalked by the paparazzi everywhere?
Not everywhere. They do know where I live.
Right.
So I am photographed basically every day, which is a really bizarre experience.
And I have to say, you look amazing today. You're wearing my favorite shade of red. Can you tell us what you're wearing?
I'm wearing Loewe. I love Jonathan. I'm a big fan of Loewe and Jonathan Anderson. So I'm happy to be wearing it.
And just to describe it, since this is a podcast, it's
right.
this fabulous sort of Snow White's apple red, oversized sweater dress, but mini dress.
Mm-hmm.
Trauma, would you edit
I'd
me?
Agree. I'd okay. agree.
with some bizarre shape.
Yeah. I mean, there's always a twist with Jonathan Anderson.
Yeah, there's always something that kind of is his signature, some oddness about it that I love.
And I can't imagine having to get dressed every day if you're photographed every single day. What is that like? Because I don't think I've seen a bad photo of you on the street.
I don't know about that. When there's that many pictures and, you know, Lord knows I can't control the lighting outside of my home. No, I mean, yesterday I took my son to preschool in sweats and, you know, sneakers. And somehow those pictures are still circulated. I'm like, who cares? But it is definitely something I think about because the longevity of those and the distribution of those images is so bizarre to try to comprehend. I one time had the revelation, and I've repeated it many times since, that, you know, one image of me going to get coffee could be the picture that people like see when I die, when they Google my name.
Right.
And that's so weird. You know, it's a really bizarre thing because I think there's obviously so much media that there's also some things that are forgotten for sure. But yeah, it's really weird. So getting dressed, I don't know. I was saying this the other night. I was at my friend's book release party, and I was speaking to a reporter, and she said, how do you get dressed for an event like this? And I don't know what came over me, but I was like, have you ever seen the movie 13 Going on 30? She was like, where are we going with this? But that's sort of how I feel. I can't believe that I'm lucky enough to have the life that I do and live in New York City. And even though there is pressure and there's whatever, I sort of just dress for myself and really enjoy the fact that I'm an adult who gets to decide what kind of woman I want to be, whether that's me going wearing sweats to drop off my son at preschool or, you know, going to Vogue for Forces of Fashion. So yeah, I just try to enjoy it. I think of it as a self-expression.
Yeah.
A lot of your career is you're making money by having photos of you taken, but then paparazzi are just taking pictures of you and they're making money from it. So do you ever feel, are there, I've in your book, I think you say there are no photos of me that are just for me.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any way to take power over that, or how do you sort of handle that?
Yeah, I don't know about power, but I think control. And, you know, that's something that I'm kind of striving for every day. One of the things I've, you know, I wrote an essay about this called Buying Myself Back, that I honestly could continue to write about now that I have a son and I'm thinking about his image and him getting paparazzi.
For people who maybe don't remember, it was the most read essay on New York Magazine for the entire year.
Thank you so much. You've done your research. It's, you know, the whole idea of the value, you know, learning about the business and what makes, you know, what was my livelihood. It's obviously the images of me, but then having many experiences, not just with paparazzi, but with other photographers and in the age of the internet, where those images were used and people were profiting off of them and I had no stake in them. And it was this sort of really strange moment where I was like, if this is the most valuable thing about me for this career, then why are so many people exploiting it? And I'm not able to benefit from the usage of those images. It's an ongoing question. And no, I would say there are photos of, you know, personal family photos that feel really special to me. And I think because of my son, I'm able to think about protecting him more than I would ever myself. So that has changed. But in general, it is a bizarre thing. I mean, there are some paparazzi who understand that I do not want my son photographed and honor that. And then there are some that just basically don't care. And there's nothing I can do. It's a strange thing as he's getting older and, you know, starting to have an awareness of these photographers. The experience is, I don't like it. Because they're not safe people. They will photograph us if we fall. They won't rush to help us. And I need my son to understand that. But I also don't want him to be fearful. So,
yeah,
it's weird.
Have you talked to other friends, famous friends with kids and how they navigate that? Because I think that's probably concern that a lot of people share now.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually amazing. You know, I think Halle Berry and Jennifer Garner have done a bunch of stuff in California around protecting their children. And I think Anne Hathaway is also starting to deal with that because she has children in New York City and experiences the same thing of like, I don't want my kids to be going to school and being photographed. But it's really personal, you know, and I think like so many things right now, we live in a new era where everything is online and we don't know what responsibility we have to our children to protect them and if it even matters or not when it comes to photos. And I think everyone, it's sort of a personal decision.
What age did you start modeling, and what was your first modeling gig like?
Oh, God. I started modeling when I was 14. Really younger than that. I was doing theater school in San Diego. And
which is where you grew up?
Yeah, that's where I grew up. I was born in London, but was raised in San Diego. And I had a acting teacher who said she should really think about modeling. And my dad was a high school teacher. My mom was an English professor. And they were thinking about how are we going to pay for college, all of that. So they were starting to meet people whose kids had, you know, a nice college savings because they were in one Kodak commercial. I remember there was this girl who like hit a soccer ball in a Kodak commercial, and it made such an impression on me because my parents were like, she could put a down payment on a house. And that just blew my mind, you know? So that was really, you know, I think my parents were both working. It wasn't like a child star type, whatever energy. But then I started modeling and I signed with Ford Models when I was 14.
And what was your first gig?
I think it was like a teen magazine editorial that probably did not pay or paid $50. I honestly don't remember the first time I was shot. I did do like headshots and stuff before that for theater. It was a bizarre, you know, being that young and kind of not understanding anything, you know.
It sounded like your parents encouraged you. Is it something that you wanted to do? Were you interested? I mean, a lot of young girls at that age, that's the dream, you know?
Yeah, my mom always says, to me, like, you wanted to do it. And it's like, well, no shit. I was 13.
Yeah.
Who doesn't want to be a model, you know? And especially we're talking Y2K era, you know, Britney Spears, Christina Aguilera, this real, like, the most, to me at that moment, the most powerful and important women were famous ones and photographed ones. So I wanted to be a part of that, especially in middle school when right. I was like, what do I even look like? Like, am I a monster? Am I hot? You know, whatever. And so it was this sort of course I wanted to do it, you know?
And how do you think those first jobs guided your experience of modeling and guided your professional path in general overall?
They didn't. I mean, I think that one thing that, you know, there are stories where people are like, I did this one job and then I did this other job and then wha-bam. Like, for me, it was so many years of just working. And I, you know, once I got my driver's license, I would drive myself, miss school and, you know, do a shoot and a job and not have to work a minimum wage job in a cafe, which was tight. I loved that aspect of it. And that was sort of just how I saw it. I saw it as work. And it really wasn't until I'd had some fame that I started to be like, oh, right, this is a career. And it was partly because my parents are artists. Like, my dad is a painter, my mom is a writer, but they were never able to make a living doing their art. They had to have a profession. So there was this real kind of separation of church and state for me about how you made money and how what you actually did. So I went to a year of college and was planning, I was majoring in art, and it sort of like, I was planning on this just always being my side hustle that kind of allowed me to do what I really wanted to do. But I graduated high school in 2009, so the housing market had collapsed. I was very scared of student debt. I had seen what my friends were dealing with who were older than me. So when the opportunity came for, I was working a lot more, I was like, I mean, do I need a degree in art? Like right now, you know, and maybe I should just, and everybody also, you know, really emphasized the idea of, you know, you won't have a long time for this. You're young. Women can only model until they're maybe 30, maybe. And that's if they're really lucky. So I felt like, oh, shit, I guess I better do that. And that's when I dropped out. Mm. Yeah.
Your big break for the maybe one person in this room who doesn't know was the Blurred Lines video. Do you, that was, how long ago was that? 10 years now?
Yeah. 2013.
Do you have, oh, exactly. Mm-hmm. Do you think back on it differently now? Or is there, do you think on the experience like, oh, poor baby Emily, this was maybe different than I thought it was at the time? Or
I mean, I wish I was better at, oh, poor baby Emily. I don't think I've ever said that in my life. I need to probably do that more, be more therapeutic. I wrote about it in the book as well. There's an essay called Blurred Lines, because the evolution of my politics happened in relation to this video and my attitude and my feeling around it. It's very complicated. When I was 21 and I became famous for basically dancing around naked in a music video, a lot of people came for me, not just the video and the lyrics and all that, but just for me as a 21-year-old girl who had been, my body was in this video. And I was very defiant because I was like, no, I get to do what I want and choice is powerful and I can be in my body and feel good about it, and don't tell me that I'm not a feminist. I was raised by a feminist mom. Politics were a big part of my conversation. It wasn't something that I hadn't believed in before. So I took this really controversial stance because, you know, obviously the men are clothed in the video. The lyrics are, you know, the lyrics are the lyrics. And it wasn't until I was older that I started to think, I changed my attitude around that because I thought about power dynamics in a different way. And I think that, you know, when you are in your early 20s and you are using your sexuality, you can mistake the attention that you're getting as being power. And so writing about the actual dynamics of the set, it was a female director and there were a lot of women, but who was actually in control, whether who was entitled to my body, whether or not I was safe, it made me realize that actually, you know, this mistake that young women make, which is a fair one, because I don't know that I would be sitting here had I not done that video, which is very important to kind of recognize. I think a lot of people want to kind of skip past that. I would, you know, people, young women really believe that that's that's it. That's power, right? It's just like the Britney Spears thing. It's like, why did I want to model in the first place? And I think what occurred to me kind of from much, not because I was wanted this to be true, was that, you know, it's really, I think how I put it in the book is the power that was granted to me because of male desire left me indebted to the men who had granted me that power in the first place. And that's the evolution of my politics around it.
Do you ever hear the song on the radio now? I mean, I guess no one listens to the radio anymore.
But do I hear the song? And
does it like a trigger or are you like, ugh?
No. Okay. I'm over it.
Let's take a short break. We'll be back with the run-through in just a moment.
Hi, we're Carlene and Jill, hosts of Breaking Beauty Podcast, the show all about the breakthrough people, products, and moments in beauty.
On our show, you're going to find hella inspiring guests like Emily Weiss of Glossier,
and you'll get beauty tips galore from the top pros in the industry, like Kim Kardashian's makeup guru. And you'll hear skincare secrets from the likes of Dr. Pimple Popper.
Plus, you'll get shopping help with our Damn Goods episodes, where we review the latest products hitting store shelves to let you know what's actually worth your money.
Listen every Wednesday to Breaking Beauty Podcast.
Have you ever owned something that inspired you to up your game? Maybe a chef-grade range made you want to hone your cooking skills, or a high-tech tennis racket made you want to work on your backhand. I recently bought a new pair of running shoes, and that made me love hitting the pavement again. Well, when we own exceptional things, they inspire us to do exceptional things. The all-new Lexus GX has an exceptional capability that will have you seeing possibilities you never knew existed. Its advanced technology and luxurious interior mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. Live up to the all-new Lexus GX, luxury beyond limits. Experience amazing at your Lexus dealer. And we're back with the run-through with Vogue, live in front of a studio audience. Choma, how are you feeling? Emily, how are you feeling?
Feeling good. Feeling very, like, supported by our audience.
Oh, great.
Captive audience.
It's true.
Same. They're good. They're a good group.
Emily, let's talk about modeling. If we had a magic wand and we could change one thing about the modeling industry, what would you change?
There needs to be unions for models.
I think that's a really good idea.
It's absolutely insane that there aren't unions for models. I think that there are good agents, whatever, but it's a systemic issue where the agencies are more interested in protecting the relationship they have with the clients than they are of taking care of these very, often very, very young women who've just turned 18, maybe are leaving their families from, you know, very countries where they have no reference for an industry like this, and they are taken advantage of, and there's no one to protect them. And I feel quite strongly about this. I am a very proud SAG member, and I cannot believe the conditions and the sort of things that happen to young women in the fashion industry. And I'm not just talking about predatory, I'm just talking about fair pay, breaks, you know, accommodations. And again, these are really young girls, and it's not okay.
Often I think that we see women pitted against each other in that world. Do you feel that there's a sisterhood now? What was it like entering? Were there models who you kind of, is there a camaraderie? Like, what's the community feel like for you?
I think it's both. I think now that I'm older, I don't know if it's about me or just being in the industry, or maybe it's also the climate has changed and the world has changed. I think that there's more camaraderie and more communication. That's one thing that I think a union would really help the industry with, just the ability to communicate about pay and about, you know, this client and this, you know, whatever. And communication is power, right? But I mean, it's just like life, right? It's like high school. It's like you have some friends who are great. But of course, you know, women and femme presenting people have been taught that there's this sort of scarcity mindset we have to adopt, that there can't be multiple beautiful women. There can't be, you know, that there's a best, that there's whatever. And I do think that as particularly younger women suffer from that simply because they just want to be successful. And they think that, you know, by not sort of being supportive of other women, that they're somehow more, have a better chance at winning, quote unquote.
Mm. Have you noticed, because we've definitely noticed it across the fashion industry, but have you noticed that the Ozempic moment has affected body positivity and representation in modeling?
Yeah. You know, I feel like it wasn't just Ozempic. Okay. I think Ozempic was a symptom of thinness still being the ultimate. And I talked about this. I lost a lot of weight after I had my son. I was down to like 99 pounds. Very, wow. Very small. And you know what? I was working a lot. And it's a really bizarre thing to sort of, I mean, but that, if that's not an example, I was at my least healthy, you know, whatever. And that's when I was working the most. So as much as I do see body positivity, as much as I do see some diversity, I don't think it's impactful enough. It hasn't sort of really gotten into fashion. And I have a lot of friends who could speak about this better because they're curve or whatever. And there's still excuses constantly being made about why they can't walk the show or why, you know, whatever. Oh, well, we didn't have time to custom make that look or blah, blah, blah. And I think it's really unfortunate.
What's your wellness routine and what's, you know, how do you stay well? Like, how do you
Are you a goop
yourself?
Girly?
Yeah. Is it infrared saunas?
Oh, I did get a wonderful facial yesterday. I was like, I need to do this more often.
Your skin looks pretty good.
Thank you. So my new thing is resting. This is my new thing I actually talked about on my
first,
podcast.
Everyone.
Okay.
Okay, but here's the issue about how we think about rest now. We think resting is being online. We think being in our bed and just frying out on our phones is resting. That is the least restful thing you can do for yourself. I used to love, I call it one-eyed scrolling. You're just like, you know, in bed. That is exhausting. I mean, the way that we intake the amount of information that we are processing on an hourly basis is exhausting on top of just your personal life, your professional life, whatever. So I got very sick last month, actually in the middle of Fashion Month, and I came home and I was like, it was a creepy kind of combination of symptoms, like my stomach hurt, but I also had a sinus infection, and I was like, am I dying? Is this it? And I basically kind of did something different than I'd ever done before, which is I just didn't look at my phone and I didn't work because I never think of it as working. I'm like, I just answered a couple emails. But that's working. Mm. And that's exhausting. And it's a really different type of thing to go offline and to, I watched movies, not with also scrolling and not with, you know, reading articles and not with taking that hot TikTok take, like just rest. So I really believe in that now. And one of the ways that this has helped me is having a 2.5-year-old who's growing so rapidly that I'm scared of missing moments with him. Mm-hmm. So I've learned to be like present in a different way and it helps. I feel better.
I also, in your book, you write about, or I think it was in a podcast interview, maybe with Ashley Graham, about how you write every day and that that's sort of a meditation of sorts. Is that still something you do?
No. God, no.
So that's a key about.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not an artist way girly at all. Yeah. I don't journal. I'm unfortunately too much of an editor. It's something that I don't love. Mm. Like I just can't, I never, even when I was a kid, I couldn't keep a diary because I'd reread it and be horrified by how embarrassing whatever I was that it said. So no, writing for me is torture and not therapeutic. I mean, it's the best. It is cathartic at the end of the day, but no, I don't keep a journal.
I agree with you about writing being torture.
It is. It's like how people talk about exercise and working out, where they're like, it's so awful, but then you feel so good.
Yeah. And what was it like finishing your book? I mean, didn't you have like that kind of, you get that euphoria and then you crash? Mm-hmm. Or what
it's
was,
like Dorothy Parker said, everyone loves having written. No one
yes,
loves writing.
No, yeah,
it's true. I mean, you know, it's weird. I do, the energy I have after a day where I've done decent amount of work is really at something. I'm in a good mood. Yeah, I had just had my son when I finished the book, and that was really wild because I'd written like 90,000 words before I even sold the book. So the book was like kind of done. But then I was
That's
editing.
A long book for people who don't
know how
normally
to
you sell like one essay, you'll sell, you know, something and then you write the rest of the book. I was so prepared for people to underestimate me that I was like, and I was just so tired. I feel like I hear people say, oh, I'm going to direct this movie, I'm writing a script, I'm whatever. I was like, I'm going to, before I say one single thing, I'm going to write the actual book. But then the editing process is really serious and there were things I wanted to add in and whatever. And mom brain is a real thing.
Yeah.
And I had a moment where I remember just sitting and being like, I've ruined my life. Like, I don't have my brain anymore because I gave birth to this baby and I'm not going to be able to finish this book.
How long did it take for that shift to...
I mean... You know, it's funny. One of the essays that I wrote after he was born is sometimes what people will come up to me and be like, that's my favorite essay. At the time, it didn't feel, I couldn't think of words. Mm. I didn't feel that like connection to the focus that I wanted. But it, I mean, it worked out. I would say by the time I was doing press for the book, which was November, and I'd locked the book by June, I was like,
when was your son born?
March.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
You said that you were afraid that people might underestimate you. Do you think that you still feel, do you feel that people underestimate you? Has there been an example of that that you can talk about? Or
people underestimate femme presenting people.
Agreed.
Period. I'm not special in that way. I want to be clear. And I think that, you know, you just have to kind of, I mean, one thing that's happened is I just don't care as much. People can underestimate me all they want and that's fine. It doesn't impact me. I used to really have this feeling of like, oh my God, I have to prove something. I have to do something. I have to, you know, have this accolade or, you know, the book needs to reach this kind of success or this person needs to approve of it. Or, you know, did I say now doing podcasts or my own podcast, did I say like too much? Did I say yeah too much? I don't care. If you don't like what I'm saying or can't understand it because you're so caught up in your own sexism about the way I'm speaking and my vocal fry, well, fuck you. Sorry. I'm sorry. I felt like I was allowed.
We allow.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I'm like, let's get rowdy in here. No, but I don't mind it. And I think everyone has experienced, you know, that before.
I want to hear about your son. What's his favorite thing in the whole world?
Well, he's very excited about being a purple octopus for Halloween.
Excellent. And what are you being?
Well, so he keeps changing. It's really stressful. He keeps being like, mommy's a shark, mommy's a crab. I'm like, you gotta pick something.
You gotta commit.
I'm sure also, by the way, at the time he gets this octopus costume, he's gonna be like, no, I wanna be whatever else. But it seems we have a sea theme.
Okay.
No, he's amazing. He loves, his favorite book right now is Eloise. Louise, which mm-hmm. I'm quite proud of because I love that book.
That's very chic.
Yeah, it's chic and it reminds me of my own childhood. Mm-hmm. And there's actually so much for him to kind of think about in it in a way that's cool. But I mean, you know, I'm his mom, but I do think he's the best, mm-hmm. you know?
Who do you go to for mom advice?
I have an amazing network of mom friends that kind of came together, pandemic babies. And we have a group called Moms. And it's just fun. I mean, Sly had a rash on his, we were in the bath, this is last week, and a rash developed on his body. And I was like, oh my God. And I sent crazy pictures to the mom group and everybody sent their crazy pictures of rashes.
And what
back.
Was it?
I think it was actually just an allergic reaction, but I was worried it was hand, foot, and mouth. So, which is a whole.
We just had that. It was terrible.
So it turns out that's going around, which I wouldn't have known had I not had this mom group. This generation of moms are so refreshing because they're just so honest about all the feelings that they have around this shift in identity and this responsibility. And I think that's so much more healthy.
Do you think about your mom differently now that you're a mom? Or the way she parented?
Yeah, I think about both my parents differently, definitely. It's bizarre to come into the world and be like, mother, father, and then, you know, my parents were always very bohemian, so they always felt like friends, but just realizing like, oh, they had this whole life before, and then they had this baby that they had to, you know, take care of, and without the internet and without the kind of attitude of just brutal honesty, you know, that mommy blogging, thank God, kind of brought around actually over 10 years ago.
I remember we shot you actually when you were quite pregnant and you were glowing. It's one of my favorite pictures of you. How did becoming a mother change your relationship to your body. I think it's like such a transformative experience.
Yes, it was. When I was writing my book, I realized I'd become obsessed with control. It's one of the reasons I like writing. There's nobody else. It's just me deciding what words go on the page. It's my story. It's my POV. And control of everything, right? Like ownership of image, blah, blah, blah. And what being pregnant taught me, which was also a lesson about my body, is that actually sometimes the way to be the most at peace and oddly in control is to let go. My body was just doing things that I didn't understand and just marching forward in this incredibly humbling way where I was completely out of control. And there was a world where that could have totally sent me, which I have had friends that that's happened to. But instead, I just leaned in, and actually with birth specifically, there was this surrendering of control and this like faith in my instinct and in my body and what it's able to do and the knowledge that's there. And I really believe that. Actually, before we started this, somebody asked, what's the best advice you've ever gotten in your life? Which is a tough question. And I said, trust your instincts. And I do actually think it's sort of related to the lesson I had through birth.
There was a recent internet moment of mom shaming of like a mom, of like a party mom, a celebrity party mom. Mm. And people really came to her support. You are now a dating mom. Mm-hmm. Do you feel judged about that? Do you feel that there's a stigma attached to it?
I do. I think that, you know, there is this sort of classic archetype of femininity and this journey of, you know, you're a child and then you're hot and then you're a mother and then you die. And it sucks. It's not great. And I just don't believe in that. I don't believe in that arc. And I think that the best way to change that is by living, you know, your authentic life and not trying to fit into these kind of boxes that have been prescribed to us.
And how are you enjoying single life? I mean, I know you've called, as a young divorcee, a chic.
Yeah, I do think it's actually kind of chic. I think it's really interesting. I'm actually thinking about writing about divorce, and I called on a couple writer friends to offer a bunch, like, what's the best divorce writing? So we had like Rachel Cusk, and there's a bunch of books that I'm reading right now, and they're all about women who are older and their families are coming apart. And I do think that my generation, there are a lot of women getting divorced quite young, and I want there to be more resources about that, because I think there is still such a taboo and so much shame in the idea that divorce is failure. And listen, that's hard, and that there's a loss, absolutely, that comes with divorce and separation. But, you know, women don't always get the fair end of that deal, marriage, right? You, especially now, because women are working and they're making oftentimes more money than their partners, and then they are also taking on all the responsibilities at home. Mm-hmm. So I think it's really important that there are examples of women deciding to opt out of that and saying, this isn't failure, this is evolution for me, and without the shame. So I hope that that happens more and more.
Are you on any dating apps?
I am. I never check it anymore. There was a minute where I was like, let's go. And now I don't need to see another profile. I don't.
You have to take breaks from that.
Yeah, I think I might. It might be a permanent break. I have not gone. I went on one date, but it was somebody that was a mutual friend, so it doesn't really count as an internet date.
Yeah, that's a fake internet
date.
Yeah,
thank you.
I always have a lot of anxiety creating a profile. Did you do it with a friend, or did... Like, how do you...
So I have always been that friend who curates all of my other friends, because, you know, I have some experience in curating an image and whatever, and I love it. Yeah, no, I did it. Yeah, I always ask advice. Definitely the first round when I put it up, I was like, what the hell? Talk about what pictures do I use? You know, like, is it like the goofy, like, you know, this is what it would be like to FaceTime me, or am I like serving? You know, I didn't know what to do. I was consulted. I got good help.
What makes you swipe right?
Oh God, what makes me swipe right? I mean, I feel for these dudes on these apps, because they don't always know. There's a lot of like pictures from one wedding they went to. And I'm like, don't, just because that's a professional photo, that doesn't mean that should be the one you use. Like, I want to know how you dress. I want to know like what your vibe is. And they're not always good at curating the vibe. So I feel bad for them because I'm like, I don't know. I think you're just bad at this and you might be lovely in person. So just maybe no wedding photos in the general rule.
So I take it you don't want to get married again.
I don't know. I actually don't. I don't feel that way. I would maybe get married again. It depends.
When was the last time you kissed someone besides your son?
Oh, wow, this podcast. Hot seat. I don't kiss and tell.
All right, we love to hear it.
Good answer. Well, you have a collaboration out?
AGG.
Yes.
And are there any designers that you're dreaming to, now that you've, this is not your first collab, right?
It isn't. It isn't.
Right. So you've collaborated with a few.
Yeah, I love designing and I think it's really fun. I mean, and then I get to have those pieces in my closet and give them to my friends. It's fun.
Yeah.
My dream? Come on. This isn't, I mean, Miu Miu, like, you know, Prada, Loewe. As much as I was talking about unions and protection, whatever, I have to say, I love working in this industry. I just think that there are so many amazingly creative people who are doing really interesting things. And so there's just a ton of people I would love to work with and have been lucky enough to work with.
Yeah, it must be fun being on the other end, especially you're modeled, you know exactly what works on your body, you know, yeah, you know what looks right.
Totally. Oh, that's the beautiful thing about the way that the industry has evolved is that, you know, models aren't just thrown in, you know, they have their personality does and their politics and their, you know, thoughts and them as a person and as an identity plays so much more into them as a model. And I'm very happy about that.
What is your cultural diet?
Ooh, it's kind of all over the place. I mean, I really love TikTok. Like, I love TikTok.
What's your TikTok? Like, what are you getting?
Oh, my FYP. It changes. I have been on lesbian TikTok, which I am so honored. I'm unworthy, and I'm there. And it's just lucky. I still, can you believe it, love to read books.
What are you reading right now?
Deborah Levy. It's actually a book about divorce. What do you know? But it's beautifully written. And, well, I also have to give a shout out to my friend Ziwei, whose book, her collection of essays just came out, Black Friend. And I did just finish that. And I recommend everyone go and buy it. I think Pub Day was 3 days ago. So got to get her on the bestseller list. So everyone order multiple copies. Yeah.
Last question. Mm. What is next for Emily? Do you have another book project happening? Are we going to, what are we looking forward to?
I definitely always plan on writing. I'm not going to ever say that I'm just as I'm in the tradition. I never say I have a book until I have it. You know, I'm really interested in mediums of expression. So for me, it's like I am interested in film. I'm interested in video. I'm interested in podcasts. And so for me, it's kind of like the sky's the limit in that sense. And yeah, just I love living in New York for the time being, and I'm raising my boy.
And we're so looking forward to what you've got in store in 2024. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's wonderful.
Thank you to our wonderful, enthusiastic audience. That's it for this episode of The Run Through with Vogue. See you next week.
Yeah, see you next week. Thank you both for having me.
The Run Through with Vogue is a production of Condé Nast Entertainment.
The show is produced by Susie Lechtenberg, Chelsea Daniel, and Alex John Burns. It's engineered by Jake Loomis and Gabe Quiroga and mixed by Mike Kutchman.
See you soon.
Bye.
Get balanced or thrive trying. My name is Les, and I'm the host of Balanced Black Girl, a podcast dedicated to helping you feel your best. Join me for casual conversations about what it means to live a well-rounded life. I cover everything from how to make friends as an adult to how to create a workout routine that works for you to how to practice better financial wellness. Tune in for approachable conversations with wellness thought leaders and inspiring guests, as well as intimate solo chats with me for relatable advice. Follow wherever you get your podcasts and look out for new episodes every Tuesday.